This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Back to Everyone Talks to Liz. I thought I'd start with this. You know, we've all heard the expression, I got offered the opportunity of a lifetime. Okay, please, do not feel left out if you have never gotten one of those. I haven't. Most of us have had to fight for every shred, every single opportunity. But for that rare group of people who do get presented with the so-called opportunity of a lifetime, 99% of those people either fail to capitalize on it or don't even have the courage to reach out and grab it. But there is that 1% who do leap across the gulch of fear, grasp at it, and turn it into gold. And today, I'm sitting with one of those 1%ers who did get a rarefied shot and did not blow it. That shot came in the form of a phone call 8 years ago as he was driving a cab in New York City one night trying to eke out a few last fares in order to make rent. He had no bank account because he had no money, but he had a talent. He could make his riders laugh with his jokes, jokes that got him noticed by a television producer who called one night and said, I might just have a one-night opportunity for you. Today, that cab driver is the star of the highest-rated weekend comedy show on cable, has a best-selling book, and a hugely successful and popular radio show. And his name is Jimmy Failla, star of Fox News Saturday Night. Welcome to Everyone Talks to Liz.
This is a big deal. Our radio prom, long overdue. They don't hear this, but I am wearing a tuxedo and a boutonniere.
Right, and I do have laser discs of women prison movies in my jacket.
That's hot. Hold on a second.
Well, yeah, because, you know, the prom, you got to watch something afterward.
Well, I would tell you that, not to get too far off track, but during my cab driving days, I have definitely dropped people off at some women's prison proms if we were going to go there. But I think based on your intro, I will start with good to be here and thank you. That was wonderful and touching.
You're welcome. I mean, I'm sure that I made up half of it, but...
No, you didn't. It was real. I just want to issue one caveat, because when you say, and he hasn't blown it, it's only week 7. It's only week 7. I mean, has the show lasted longer than we thought it would on TV? Yes. We all had the under 3.5 in Vegas, but we made money off of that. And now it's pretty much house money.
Well, but you're not in Joni Loves Chachi territory where, you know, you get canceled pretty soon. But...
Oh, that's funny. No, I'd like to think we'll make it beyond that one evening. But thank you. Seriously, thank you for having me. And I have so much to talk about.
I know you do, but I actually have so much to ask you because, okay, so for you guys who don't know, there are about, like, I don't know, 45 floors in the Fox Business News Corporation building. I'm on the 20th floor, and I don't know, about a year ago, I started seeing you walking around the hall, and I'm thinking, oh, God, I don't want to talk to anybody else.
I got enough people.
I've got enough people in my life. Do I have to know this guy's... It was you, and only recently did one day I pass you and I thought, you know, there are few people in this world who have an aura about them. And your aura is one of joy. I don't know. There's something about you.
Can I give you a thing for real? And thanks for noticing that. I'm a dog with a job. Let me explain it to you. You know when you go to the airport?
Yeah.
And the dog that sniffs the bag is always in a good mood, wagging his tail because he can't believe they're counting on him to save the plane. That's who I am. Every time I walk into a radio studio or a TV studio, my tail's always wagging because I can't believe they're counting on me to save the plane. So that's the vibe. And that's why it usually works. Assuming no one throws a tennis ball right now, we're going to be okay.
Gratitude.
That's what it is.
It's the old gratitude. So, you know, the cab driver thing fascinated me and my producer, Bailey Rabinowitz. So we said, let's get him on because we're all about the climb. But I need to know about you as a kid and your family background. You grew up on Long Island?
I did. I grew up in Levittown on Long Island, and everyone in my family, I mean, every male member, and my dad, my cousins, my uncles, everyone is a cop but me. Everyone. I mean, all of my uncles, all of my cousins. I'm talking into the 20s in terms of male members of my family. I've said before, I probably would have been a cop if it weren't for this thing called the background check. things got a little dicey when I heard they were going to start looking around the old neighborhood. I was like, you know what, gentlemen, thank you for your time.
Yeah, this thanks. You know what? I'm in honor.
We're going to get out of here.
And in awe of you. I just could never reach your heights.
Yeah, the good news is I did get a 4.0 in college. The bad news is it was blood alcohol content. They don't really look upon that as favorably as you might think. So that's where it started.
It feels like your neighborhood was, a better side of Copland with Harvey Keitel.
That's really funny. Do you want to know what it was for real? It was comps, and because Levittown was billed for GIs returning home from the war. So there was a lot of ex-military. So I grew up with a lot of old men that you should never make a sudden move around. That's what I grew up with. So I could have a flashback and punch you in the throat. But that's how it started. And they were all jokey. And the other thing, the common thread through my upbringing is I actually grew up in a really oddly patriotic environment because of Levittown and its history for GIs. So I was always a guy who was kind of in on the joke that if you live here, you know, we're doing all right. You know, for all the things and shots people like to take at the country, you know, you can take them here, which for starters puts it well ahead of most countries these days. But I always had that in me and really did believe that I was living in some type of a land of opportunity. So I was a crazy child, Liz, who legitimately had a fifth grade teacher, Mrs. Pascana, who said, I want you to go home tonight, ask your parents, tell them I said it's okay to stay up and watch The Tonight Show. Because I think if you watch Johnny Carson, you know, you're going to understand why I want you to watch Johnny Carson. She's like, I'm just telling you, you have like an affable, outgoing way about you. Now, again, I maybe she had seen my report cards and was like, this guy has no hope.
No, she saw your report cards and said, this guy's hilarious.
Maybe so. But the point is, from fifth grade on, because, again, I believed like America, you could do it. You know, I believe from fifth grade on that I was going to get this show. I'm talking a million soul-crushing auditions, getting cut off and shot at in a taxi, every bad thing you do in showbiz on the way up. I truly believed like it was just not today. Like I would go, I mean, and believe me, you're really on the wrong end of it as a comic on the way up. Like you start out in opium dens, you know, on the Lower East Side. If you're lucky, okay. Believe me, there's a comic listening right now being like, who books that? How do you get into the opium then? Because you just want stage time? So
seven guys with a hookah, maybe chuckling.
Best case scenario. But so I always really did believe it. But the road from that to here was legitimately 20 years of stand-up, probably 8 full years of full-time cab driving, which is 6 days a week, 12 to 15 hours a day.
Why did you do cab driving?
Okay, so I was already doing stand-up at the time. You know, because people ask me this. They're like, how do you become a cab driver in New York City? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, you know, it helps to knock your wife up with no health insurance and owe a bookie $82,000. I mean, I found that was the easiest way in for me. Okay, but the point is, I became a cab driver because my wife was pregnant with our own. We have one son, Lincoln. We decided to stop breeding after the first report card. We're like, you know what? Maybe a dog. This isn't really our thing. Maybe we go in another direction.
Well, the apple's not falling far from the tree.
There you go. So the point is, having a kid, I knew I needed to supplement a comedy income because when you're in comedy, until you do either have your own show or some type of a big breakthrough, you're the guy who goes on before the guy they've actually heard of. So you're essentially the rodeo clown that's entertaining them while they order their 2-drink minimum and wait for the guy they want to see to come out. Sure. So you don't make a hell of a living doing that. And we needed to supplement our income when Jenny got pregnant with Lincoln. So I had a seventh grade teacher, all comes together, Mr. Schwab, who lived in Manhattan, reverse commuted to Long Island to the Levittown School District and had a entire classroom wall littered with playbills. He was a big Broadway guy, loved showbiz, loved the city. And he told me the most profound life experience he had as he drove a taxi in New York City during his summers in college. And he said it was cross-pollinated with such like a broad swath of humanity in terms of where they from and they come to other countries and other lines of work you've never heard of. And he said if you really show up to listen, engage people, hey, what's going on? They will see you as a form of cheap therapy. And deal you into so many life experiences you could never otherwise accumulate because you wouldn't live long enough to do it. So in an average shift, you might pick up 50 people a day, and they really do all have unique stories here. So I started driving because of Mr. Schwab, and I kept meticulous notes based on what he had told me. And I really did soak up a lot along the way.
Did you keep notes for material?
Yeah, a little bit of that, a little bit of a survival guide. It's really interesting. The way cab driving works, okay, as a guy who's a comedian and somewhat outgoing, in the beginning, you're using comedy to diffuse potential, tension in traffic, because you don't want somebody to flip out and stab you in the neck with a screwdriver because you made a wrong turn on 34th Street. And that's probably the first 6 months of driving. By the seventh month, you're not as jokey because you want to die. You know what I mean? You're in traffic 15 hours a day on the Van Wyck. Like, when people talk about profiling as a cab driver, I'm like, if I didn't pick you up, it's because you didn't look dangerous enough. Okay? Like, straight up. So comedy for me, okay, became a thing you could do in a taxi if only because you were in so many different conversations in terms of the variety of life that you were dealing with, that you started to, as an observationist, you started to take notes about the human condition that you could really pour into your act.
And to that end, mm-hmm. did you also start testing out your thoughts and impressions and jokes on them?
To an extent, yes. Yes. But it's more of a listener than a talker and a cab driver, because mm-hmm. this is what happens. And you can diagnose people instantly. People will get into your cab and let out the hugest sigh in the world. Like, they shut the door and it says, oh, and they'll go, so how's your day going?
Oh,
and that's
right.
A cue to be like, not bad. Well, how about you? Funny you should ask. And away you go. You're just on the clock now. And this is the joke of it, Liz, is like, because people get into a taxi and they know they're never going to see you again. So they give you conspiracy theories. They tell you everything about their love life. But the caveat is sometimes you see them again and it's very awkward. Like, oh, you're still doing that thing with the saddle? That was interesting, you know?
With the trapeze over the bed?
I thought you looked familiar. So there's a lot of listening. This is what you get out of them. More than trying material on them, they give you premises for jokes, because every joke that works is marinated in a truth that a broad group of people
will get.
Thank you. So you just start with the truth. Okay, let's say we're writing a CVS joke. What do we know? The receipts are long. So if you started with, I was at CVS, you know, CVS is a great store. If only the receipts were a little longer. Meh, you get a little laugh. But now you can go tell your CVS joke because you've got their harnessed attention. So in listening to people, cab driving is great for premises. Material gets tricky. They don't all speak our language. It's weird. You pick up a lot of international people, but it's fun. A lot of fun.
You didn't have a bank account, though, so you couldn't have been making that much money.
Well, at the lowest, we really didn't, because we were between Citibank by us had closed. HSBC was a thing. Where we were in the Upper West Side. Both of HSBC is not even in business to the best of my knowledge. But we were switching between banks over the first year Lincoln was born. Yeah, like we were cloth diapering a child. We had the Bank of Nike. We had a shoebox, but we were hoping to catch a hot streak and make it to the Bank of Reebok. I'm not going to kid you. We had ambition. It's not that we didn't see other sneaker manufacturers in our future as a banking source.
Did your wife ever doubt you?
I don't know that she did. Like, here's the thing about my wife. She grew up on a dairy farm in Wapakoneta, Ohio. So she herself is a very capable human. I mean, like highly capable.
Oh, yeah. Those guys wake up at 3 in the morning at age 4.
They also have to eat their pets at some point. It's like at some point, your favorite pet is now dinner. You know, there's an efficient, there's a cold efficiency, like a survivalist mentality to these people that make them good life partners. So I don't doubt. Okay. She did not doubt the goodwill of the mission. Or, you know, me trying to be just a force multiplier of positive energy. She had to have doubted the outcome, if for no other reason than the universe had kindly been whispering no for about 17 and a half years. And then one day was like, yeah, come on down. We're like, wait, really? Wait, what? You know, and here we are.
So let's get to that moment, that pivotal moment when the universe shifted and the world started changing its axis for you.
Yep.
You had been doing a stand-up show, and a television producer was in the audience.
Yes, this is funny. So on Kennedy's first show, The Independents, her booker and producer, Andrew.
So this is Lisa Kennedy,
yes,
who, of course, one of my dear friends, and she had a show on Fox Business Primetime.
Mm-hmm. And they saw me at the Gotham Comedy Club, and he had mentioned to me on a Sunday, it was like, hey, how do you want to, you know, would you like to come on the show tomorrow? And it was so fascinating to me, because at that point I'd been beaten up so much. you know, little hits here and there. I've done TV, you know, comedy on TV. So not nothing. Mm-hmm. But again, you're not punting lobsters off the balcony either. You know what I'm saying? But if someone's punting them, you might catch them and try to resell them on Canal Street.
Yeah, it's not like,
not the punter.
Like Lord, you know, Gold Teeth, Grey Goose tripping in the bathroom, bloodstains.
No, we're not royals. We might be Kansas City royals, okay? Maybe, with any luck. So the first time I was here doing a hit on her show, like I really, at that point, still had a seven-week lease on a taxi. So I would lease it for 7 days at a time. I wasn't necessarily driving every week by then because I was doing enough in comedy, but mm-hmm. I was still driving because I needed to. So the first time I did a hit at Fox, I had my taxi double parked on 6th Avenue. This is a good trick if anybody wants to know. You pop the trunk and throw the hazards on because it creates the appearance that you're bringing something heavy out to the vehicle, and it buys you grace with the traffic cops. And the first time I did a hit here, I left the driver's door open.
Because you weren't going to pay for parking.
No way. So trunk open, door open, hazards on, came inside and did a hit. And, you know, you're in and out of your window in like 30 minutes, hair and makeup, got back into the cab. And it was great.
And kept driving.
Just kept driving like it never happened. And a few weeks later, they were like, hey, how would you like to come back on? And I eventually was able to phase it out because they needed a writer on the show. So they brought me on to write the show. And when I got inside the building, that's when things really started to pick up speed in terms of like other TV and radio and everything in between. But it started with that show. And because I'm Sicilian, I'm like, you know, in perpetually loyal. So whatever they need, you know, whatever she needs, it's, you know, it's fine.
Well,
it's cool.
Kennedy is an original.
Mm-hmm. No,
she is, you know, people say that it takes a special kind of person to find women funny. I think women are hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
I think Sarah Silverman's hysterical.
She's great.
Kennedy is so funny.
She's got so much range. So we did a stand-up tour together over the summer, and she's great. She does a lot of impressions. Like, she opens the show, tells MTV stories, does impressions, mm-hmm. you know, tells them about funny things that happen with music stars, and she has so much range because she's funny, you know, 0 to 60 funny, but she does characters, she does voices, she's filthy on the road. So you want to know something she does really well, really quickly? Her and I, when we're checking into a show, you do the sound check where you both get up and, you know, test one, two, while the audience is empty. With a straight face, we do this at every arena, okay? We will explain to the guy who's the stage manager. Now, we'll say, you know, now for the closing bit when we club the baby seal to death, it's better if you wheel the seal out last. If it gets out early, like, people get sympathetic, they feel bad about it. But I'm like, in short bursts, they're not going to like this seal, and the bit's going to literally kill. And we will stay with it till we're about 3 minutes before showtime, and someone's like, is the seal even here? We don't know what's going on. I'm like, oh, man, we're so sorry. And the only reason this joke even flies with us is because we're both big animal lovers. So it's even funnier for us to deadpan to some poor person who's probably also an animal lover.
Of course.
I was like, what's going on? It's kind of funny.
Well, that is the thing. People have to be listening and to get your jokes. Mm-hmm. This is Everyone Talks to Liz, and we will be right back. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/claimin. Just go to Indeed.com/claimin right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/claimin. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. I want to go back to the cab because I'm still so fascinated mm-hmm. about the types of people you met. Mm-hmm. And I'm just bummed because I never had a New York City cab driver like you.
Oh, that's funny. Well, there are some people who are bummed because they did. I'll tell you a funny story. I picked up an older couple. It was a great story. On the west side by the hospital up on, I guess it's 168th and Broadway. It's way uptown.
That would be Columbia.
Yeah, Columbia Presbyterian, I believe. Yeah. So I had picked him up on 23rd and 10th. Now, there used to be, over there, a gas station on 24th and 10th. We had Citgos in the city for a little while, little Hugo Chavez action.
Oh, yeah, the little Venezuelan
deal. Yeah, the little ones. So there was a little Citgo over there, and I had picked them up in front of the same place 2 days in a row. But really quickly, the first day I picked them up, I drove them up the West Side Highway, got off just below, exit below Dyckman. Dyckman's like 178, so we got off like 155th. And what I thought had been a pleasant ride, listened to the music, made some small talk, fine. I picked them up the next day. We were 5 minutes into the ride. They clearly didn't recognize me. And the woman goes, well, I've got to tell you, you're far more pleasant than yesterday's driver. And the old man goes, the old man leans up to me and goes, the man was a menace. It's so great. Because it was, I so knew it was them. I'm like, oh, this adorable couple from yesterday. This is great. And I actually said when they got in, I'm like, it's good to see everybody again. And they were probably like, who's this weirdo? But it was so unequivocally them. Same building, same sit-go, same people, same drop-off. But they just didn't remember me.
You know, funny. You're known to say that anybody who tells you that we don't have life on other planets has never driven a taxi in New York City.
That's funny. And I will tell you this, a few of the experiences I've had, because I have had self-proclaimed time travelers, but I've also had fascinating people. I drove...
I've had a cousin who believed she was from the planet Turquoise.
Get at it. That's insanity. Well, there is a... I'll give you a couple quick examples. I did have a story I've told at Fox before. I had a woman get in with a sock puppet on each hand who yelled at me all the way to Cabin Plaza in Brooklyn. That's a real thing. And the worst part is it was the end of the shift. At the end of the shift, when you're approaching 5 p.m., you need to get a cab back on time. You can refuse rides if they're not in the direction of your garage. Okay. That's how that works. You have the off-duty on. So I dropped someone off on the Penn Station cab line on 7th Avenue, 31st Street. Mm-hmm. My garage is on 21st and 7th. So anyone who's not going straight down to 7th Avenue, I can't take. But I have about an 8-block window where I could. Anyway, the way cabs work a lot of times is somebody gets out, the door open, the door shuts behind them. You don't even hear the new person get in. Okay. So in this instance, the door shuts and I'm like, hey, sorry, I'm just going back to the garage. I don't think I can take you. But there's no one over the partition. And then within an instant of me making that realization, hand one comes up and hand two comes up.
Come on.
And they're like, we're going to Cabin Plaza in Brooklyn. I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm off duty. And the one puppet goes, why? Because we're black and they were white puppets. But I was like, this is a really funny person.
Stop.
So anyway, I had to eat a fine because if you're late to the garage, you basically pay the hour for the rental. But I ate a fine, meaning I lost like $75, but got cursed out all the way to Cadman Plaza in Brooklyn because there was no throwing this person out of my cab. It's like I was arguing with a hand. And at the peak of the revelry, and I'll never forget this, approaching the Manhattan Bridge, I argued with a hand. I turned and yelled at the one hand and caught myself in the rear view like, you just did that, Jim. You yelled at a hand.
You've lost your mind.
That's a real thing that happened in your life.
That just happened.
And so there's a lot of that. There's a lot of people who see a taxi as a utility in so many different ways, whether it's therapy, whether it's an audience member for their own performance art, which is what that clearly was. I'd add one note, and in whatever question you have, because you should hear this. There was a janitor who worked at the VA hospital down on 23rd, I believe 2nd Avenue and 23rd Street. Okay. His shtick, unbeknownst to me, was he would take a cab home every day under the pretense that he was an escaped patient from the hospital. So he would get in gowns, hail you in 23rd. He jumped into my cab and started giving me a really intense, let me tell you something. You get the F out of that hospital because they're going to kill you in there. They bring you in for one thing, you catch another, you die, you get out of there. I'm like, well, are you supposed to be out of there? He's like, I know when I need to get out of there, and I need to get out of there now. You take me over to Houston Street in Sullivan. I'm like, yeah, great, okay. So when I drive this guy over, I drop him off in the corner of McDougal Street, and I believe it's West 3rd right there by where the old Boston Comedy Club was. And he just kicked the door open and ran away in his hospital gown. Now, what's funny, okay, is within a minute of him walking away, not even a minute, probably 10 seconds, someone got off a stoop and approached me and paid for the ride and said, oh, that's Pops. That's like a thing he does every day.
Oh.
And it was amazing.
Oh.
But if you're a cab driver, I mean, you'd have no idea.
Only in New York.
Yeah, it's great.
That is classic.
Nuts.
What do you find hilarious today? I know we're going in barreling toward this 2024 presidential election. I don't love politics.
Yeah, me too.
I am a centrist. I feel most of the country is.
Yep.
But in generalities, what do you find funny about what we're heading toward?
You mean this Real Housewives episode of an election? It's, this election should be exclusively on Bravo. There's going to be hair pulling, wine throwing. It's not going to be wine. Biden's going to throw a can of Ensure. Trump doesn't drink, so I don't know what he's throwing. He's going to throw a Coke Zero or whatever the heck he's drinking over there. What I do find funny about this whole political moment we're living in is, as a comic, everybody right now is such a prisoner of the moment. And what I mean is the collective psychology of social media has everybody convinced that whatever we're talking about today, we're going to be talking about 2 months from now. And you know, as someone who's covered this, it's just not going to be the case. Like, we are not about to watch a wire-to-wire Trump and Biden call each other names till November. There will be plot twists. Things will go on. I don't doubt one of their candidacies will be in great peril at some point. But it's going to be a ride. And I enjoy the ride because I'm prepared for the sharp turn. And I know you are too, but I like living in a society where most people just don't think beyond that fire hose we're all consuming news out of. So that's where I'll find the fun. And in being, you know, to the point you made, I am comedically as centrist as could be, because the truth is good comedy can't have a political party. It's supposed to be a party. And if you're throwing a good party, everybody's got to be welcome. How good is the party? You know, if you, no, nah, not you guys, you know.
I love this. It makes me feel better about you.
See?
I thought you were a kook in the hallway.
No, I am. No, but I'm for different reasons.
I would walk the other way.
No.
Jimmy, to that end, uh-huh. I'm interested. Let me put it this way. Mm-hmm. Obviously, politics, that's fascinating. Mm-hmm. I work in Wall Street.
Yep.
And I work in that whole realm. Money isn't funny when you're losing it. I mean, the financial crises that we have faced, inflation. Mm-hmm. But what we love about comics is they make us laugh about things that have made us cry.
That's the point. Comedy for a lot of people is a coping mechanism, in that for a few minutes away, you take the power away from your torments by laughing at them. And that's why you have to shoot at every target. Because if you look at jokes like your songwriting, writing jokes like writing a song, meaning songs, okay, have notes on a scale that you can deploy to write a song. If you say to yourself as a comic, I'm only going to shoot at these targets, you're now writing a song without half the notes. You know, you're now a three-chord band, which worked out great for the Ramones, but we're not all going to be the Ramones. You know, there's only one Rockaway Beach, you know. So the reality is you have to have the best peripheral vision imaginable if you want to engage the broadest demographic of comedic consumer.
Yeah.
And that means just being mindful. So what I mean by that, Liz, is you hear a phrase a lot in comedy called read the room. But if you want to be a good comic, you actually lead the room. You don't read it. You lead it. You have a mic. You're the only one who has a voice. You set the terms of the negotiation. But what's important is that they just know you're bargaining in good faith. You're not telling jokes from a place of malice. You're not trying to other or ostracize any particular ideology. You're just trying to say, hey, this is what I find funny about that. And the way I usually buy that currency with the audience is by making fun of myself for the first 10 minutes. And they go, like, you disarmed that bomb.
Yeah.
So if I'm in New York, I do jokes about working at Fox News specifically because we're kind of the away team.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'll say, you know, it's crazy because, you know, my son's in school right now. I can't say I work at Fox News. I tell them I play piano in a brothel, you know, and the liberal audience will laugh at that. They're like, oh, yeah, we get it, you know. But then I can tag them, too. So what I do a lot in front of...
Well, self-deprecation is amazing.
You buy currency. And basically what you do in the city is you work your way through your 20-minute set and at the end tell them you work at Fox. Because I'm like, hey, you guys love me. You took the money. You can't back out now. Okay, this is who I am. Then, you know, you should give us all a chance. And that's kind of my kumbaya New York moment. On the road, it's the opposite. They know you. They love you. They watch Fox. So you're just trying not to make it a rally. You don't want them applauding for an hour and a half. You want them laughing. Mm-hmm. So I try to minimize the points I make because otherwise it just turns into, you know, clapter. Which is an
Clapter.
Idea.
Yeah. Oh.
That's the Colbert Show.
Oh, I like the name Clapter, the new lexicon that we have. You guys, all of you comics, are in a weird space right now where the wokeness prevents people from doing what guys like Chris Rock did.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, some of the most brilliant comics made fun of
everything.
Everything.
If you want to laugh, George Carlin on Campus, which is the most iconic stand-up special of the 80s for my money. This is so funny to people hearing this. It was taped at UCLA because the premise was he was so thought-provoking, he had to shoot at a college because they were the only ones open to having their ideas challenged. Fast forward to today.
Oh, forget it.
It would be called Carlin on Fire because they would burn down the student union for him daring. Okay, and I'll tell you, this is crazy. Anyone could look this up. Carlin on Campus opens, okay, with a sketch where he's playing both the nun and the student. And the nun throws the wise guy student version of him out of class. And he goes, now that I'm out of the classroom, I can do what I've always wanted to do. And he goes to the women's bathroom. And in 1984, a boy in the women's room is crazy. And that wouldn't fly now.
Sure.
And then he opens by going on stage at UCLA and talking about the AIDS epidemic, which, again, is not flying at modern UCLA. But at the time, we knew the difference between a joke and a hate crime, mm-hmm. meaning a comic was there, as you alluded to earlier, to get you away from the true gravity of these subjects. It's where the phrase gallows humor originates.
Oh, sure.
These people are actually being tortured to death, but they got a lot of free time on their hands. So they started telling jokes. And that's what gallows humor is. It's the lowest of the low for you. But you use it as kind of a bonding exercise. There's it's cathartic to the people experiencing it.
There are brilliant comics. There are hilarious comics. Who today do you find just hysterical?
Ooh, right now, that I really love. Let me think about it. I want to give you a really good answer because I watch a fair amount of stand-up of people I think are truly good. So Shane Gillis, good. A kid who just hosted Saturday Night Live is really like a legit good comic that I wasn't super familiar with 2 years ago.
Okay.
He had gotten fired from SNL before appearing on the show.
That's right.
He did well. And he hosted it a few weeks ago, mostly did his act, but I found him to be very funny. He's good. His kid Charles McBee I like a lot. He was the head writer for Charlemagne on the Comedy Central show.
Sure.
And he's pretty good. He just wrote for the Emmys and he does my show a lot. I take him on the road from time to time. Let me give you a girl comic that I love. Jessica Kirsten's really, really great. Club legend. She's a banger. She's a force of nature. I grew up obsessed with Joan Rivers and Rodney Dangerfield.
Oh my God, they were Joan joke Rivers. Tellers. Self-deprecation, which is something my favorite comic, Chris Rock, always did. I think Sam Kinison, who rest in peace, was hilarious. Mm-hmm. He had that shtick where he would yell, etc. Sarah Silverman's hilarious.
Sam had a great bit about... those, you know, Sally Struthers food commercials.
Oh, like the food.
Just tell them the move where
poverty.
The food is. Yeah, tell them the move where the food is. He's like, I'm not donating money. Just tell them the move where the food is.
There is this trend now where some comics actually make it to Broadway. Mike Birbiglia.
Yeah.
He made it to Broadway. Very funny show. Mm-hmm. Colin Quinn.
Colin Quinn, great.
Hysterical. Yeah, he was in Trainwreck. Mm-hmm. Amy Schumer couldn't be funnier. She is hilarious, too.
She's good. Mm-hmm. I know Amy well on the way up. We all play a lot of the same clubs. The funny thing about stand-up is we all, when we're not playing a theater or a big venue, inhabit the same comedy clubs. Mm-hmm. So like Gotham Comedy Club on 23rd, Seinfeld's there probably 2-3 nights a week. You know, Chris Rock comes in. Jim Gaffigan's there constantly. Yeah, because it's where they work out material. So you work out in a comedy club at that level and you perform in a theater.
Huh.
So that's about, you know.
Yeah, you test the jokes.
Yeah, I'm kind of there. Like when I go on the road now, like this weekend, I'll do 2 theater events, like 1,000-seat theaters. But I'm only in these towns one night. You know what I mean? Someone like Seinfeld is, if I was playing Radio City, it'd be the biggest night of my life. Night. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Somebody like Seinfeld would be there for 8 days and he'd sell the tickets because he has that type of reach. But you know, a girl can dream. You never know.
Let me end with this.
Okay.
It's what we began with. Mm-hmm. Opportunity of a lifetime.
Yep.
You could have so easily said, I'm too nervous. Mm-hmm. I got my shift, my cap. You figured out a way.
Yep.
What would you say to people who see opportunities fly past them and they're maybe filled with self-doubt, too scared they'll blow it?
This is the truth.
Okay. What would you say?
Trust your average. This is the best advice I give people a lot. Okay. That opportunity came to you because your average is high enough that you qualified for it. So whether you feel like you're at your best or not, your average performance is going to be commensurate with what they need out of someone doing that job. So even if it means you're walking out there nervous within an inch of your life, your default performance is going to be within one deviation of the mean of your average. So just know you've accumulated that average and trust it. That's the best thing you can do.
You know, I'm sorry. I did very poorly on my math SATs. That whole mean and average. I made it funny.
I mean, you know what? It's funny. The nerve of it coming from me because I quit statistics twice in college. But it makes sense.
Jimmy Failla, what a delight. The show is Saturday nights. Give the time.
10 p.m. Eastern, Fox News Channel. If one of you were to watch, you would double our ratings. I kid, we're doing great. We're doing great.
And the book is called Jimmy Failla, Cancel Culture Dictionary, The A to Z Guide to Winning the War on Fun.
How about it? Let's go.
Congratulations.
No, thank you. This is a big deal.
And if this doesn't work out, you have a great radio voice. You could do the news cut-ins.
That's funny. From a cab.
From a cab.
I could be doing traffic reports. Out here on 3rd Avenue. Yeah, it's so funny. I love it.
Gang, what a story. This really should make you feel really, really joyful. Not just because he's so funny and he's so positive, but he went from driving a cab and the bank of Nike, a shoebox, to where he is today because he grabbed at opportunities and he made opportunities. I just, with all of these, I want you to learn. I want you to get some courage, or I just want you to enjoy these stories and pass them on. Thank you so much for tuning in to Everyone Talks to Liz. I will see you Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern on the Klayman Countdown. Have a fabulous everything. Want to listen ad-free? You can do it with a Fox News Podcasts Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And then Amazon Prime members, you can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
The Will Cain Show is now dropping 5 episodes a week. Join Fox and Friends weekend host Will Cain as he tackles the latest headlines from his unique perspective, along with thought-provoking interviews with leading figures and live calls from viewers and listeners. Listen wherever you download your favorite podcasts.